Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah.
Hope everybody's paying attention today because we have a returning guest in studio today, and his name is Ron Days, and he has a new book out called Raptors in the Rice Lands, and we're going to talk about that and how it relates to his world. He's an expert in Gullah culture. He's local to the Charleston, South Carolina area. Mr. Ron Days, tell me a little bit about how this story developed.
Well, there were two books that we spoke about the last mm-hmm. time. They're part of my Geechee Literature series, which I started just to show that Gullah Geechee culture is a living culture, that the beliefs, the practices, the spirituality aren't things from some 200 to 800 years ago, but that they are part of our everyday life. Let's readers know and understand the living culture of Gullah Geechee people.
Well, Ron has a little bit of spirituality and thing going on where he feels certain things, and I can relate to that because I feel a lot of the stuff I talk about. And I think he feels stories that he makes relatable to kind of tell a little bit about some of the situations in the Gullah culture. So when you relate this to real life, we talked about raptors and people turn into raptors when they see an opportunity. What does that look like in your world?
What does that look like? To understand that when people give you something, they almost always are looking for something in return. Now, it may not be anything negative. Maybe it's just if it's a part of their virtue, they want to be recognized sometimes because of it. But at other times, if people assist you in any way, you need to know what it is that they're looking for, or you'll be blindsided, or you'll find that as when dealing with a raptor, you've been plucked, you've been devoured, and the raptor has flown away looking for another to do the same thing.
Now, when you break this down, talking about Gullah in this book reference Jamaicans, you know, what is that, you know, the different cultures when you say Gullah, you know, these guys from Charleston, the white guys from Charleston, the Jamaicans, Gullah, you have different, little different types of culture being made similar and they're not. What does that trigger in you?
Well, first let me explain that Gullah Geechee people are descendants of West Africans, primarily those from the rice coast who produced rice, but also along the other west coast countries of Africa who were brought to this country to work for the production of cash crops. Rice was the cash crop of the Georgetown community, and that is the setting of this novel, Raptors in the Rice Lands. But there were numerous other Africans who were brought to other parts of the world, part of the transatlantic slave trade. And that's a part of the African diaspora. So Gullah Geechee culture is very related to the other cultures of the African diaspora, Jamaica, the West Indies, even Brazil. And our beliefs, our food practices, our spirituality, all those are similar. As far as dealing with raptors, well, it different aspects of one's culture. If raptors dealing with the food ways, if there are others who wish to appropriate that culture, but they have no understanding of it, that's a misappropriation mm-hmm. of that. If there is some spiritual belief and others think that they can do the same thing, they realize that they may just miss the essence of what those who are relating in that way, and they don't really get to know it. One of the characters in this book is a root doctor. Mm-hmm. He is William Duncan. And as it is in throughout history, many people feel that root doctors are those who engage in hoodoo up, are participating in these pagan religions of West Africa, and they should be Christian or Christianized, without realizing that many of the beliefs that the religious beliefs of Gullah Geechee people and African Americans in general have been creolized. There have been these initial West African beliefs that were introduced, some, to Christianity, and there are some things that are regarded differently by those who say that they are purely Christian than those who call themselves Christian, but they adhere to some of these basic beliefs. As with Gullah Geechee people, there is the belief that our ancestors are among us. They are part of our great cloud of witnesses. They are looking down on us to protect us. Others will say that can't be. Once you're dead, you're dead. And there's no part of you that you may be reunited with them. If they also are Christians and all together, you get to heaven again. Otherwise, you're not. Some of the characters are going to a graveyard. They're pouring a libation. And I served as a former chairman of the Federal Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor Commission. When we, the commission, had a meeting in the Georgetown community, we met at Brooklyn Gardens, where I retired last year after 18 years. And this particular commission of members had family members who were buried in one of the slave graveyards of Brookween Plantations, which was established on four former rice plantations. But she began our entry into this graveyard by saying a prayer. She said that was necessary because you're going into their home.
When we talked about Gullah culture, there's some very unique things that people didn't know. First of all, the narrative that was created about the Gullah culture and the rice situation. So these white guys over here needed people to raise, you know, their rice, and they weren't smart enough to do that and grow their rice the right way. So they had to get the Gullah people and bring them here to do that. So that kind of ties in with the rice. So they were kind of a specialist for that area, right? For this type of rice. So in this book, they talk about bringing in these Jamaicans, and they're a little different maybe on how they...
In this book, and one character, Otis Doyle, he is a white investor, and he tries to connect with others to become investors, to bring some Jamaicans to the Myrtle Beach area to serve in the restaurants, upscale restaurants. And a raptor like is that they, the investors, would be helping those who they bring because they live in the poor of the poorest sections of Jamaica. And if they are brought here to this country, they sound like Gullah Geechee people. They would could be paid less money than Gullah Geechee people.
He was bringing in Jamaicans here because he thought it was more affordable.
Correct. That is the word. Really didn't care about the humanity of this people. He had no intention that if these people got sick while they are in this country, what would happen? Because perhaps they would not be insured. And they what would their living conditions look like? To him, even if they're put in a Motel 6 restaurant, it would be better than where they're from.
Gotcha.
Those are the kinds of raptor-like ideas that he tried to spread among the other investors. But in the Georgetown community, as in Charleston, Carolina gold rice was the rice that was grown. And Carolina gold rice was the rice that brought in the most cash. And it is what made the planters wealthier than the European kings and queens. Now, this book is laid out.
So does that speak to why the Carolina gold rice, I don't know if we talked about this before, but does that speak to why Charleston was so prosperous?
Yes, indeed. All the plantation owners grew rice, Carolina gold rice.
Gotcha.
And this book is laid out in four acts, all to the planting season of rice. There are four acts, and each of the chapters are based on the production of rice. The four acts are planting, growing, harvesting, and then threshing and milling. There are four chapters in each of the acts, like breaking the ground, coating the rice seeds, covering the hole with a foot. These are the things that the Africans brought with them and helped to raise the economy of South Carolina. And the Africans were brought here. They were ripped from their families, raptor-like. Mm-hmm. But our culture has impacted all of American culture. And the different beliefs and practices that are brought out in this book are mm-hmm. some of the things that I want people to be aware of.
My enlightenment and my so forth has kind of grown a little bit since the last time I talked to Ron. But if you think about that, I had this rationale about salt of the earth. We talked about salt of the earth people. And, you know, I feel like salt of the earth people were the original people. I think there was four bloodlines, the Egyptians, the Nubians, the Libyans, and the Asiatics. And I think the knowledge they had to do this, to engineer the rice and create this amount of wealth for someone else is very, very interesting. Very, very interesting, because that knowledge, you don't, you know, back then, where do you get that knowledge from to do this? Had to come from an ancient place.
Right.
And that speaks to the Gullah Geechee people being from an ancient place, an ancient lineage misrepresented over time. And there's a funny little rationale, something you said about the character, the root doctor. And this just is just a functionality thing. It's very interesting to me. It's something I learned about food, was that some things like kale, broccoli, things we've had in our diet for a long time, leaf-bearing vegetables, have a thing where, and a lot of people don't know this, is they have this thing they discrete. You know, these leaf-type vegetables discrete this thing where they don't want to be picked comes out. And this stuff that they, these leaf-type vegetables discrete, is a defense mechanism of not wanting to be picked. And it's not good for human beings. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know that. So when you talk about the root doctor, root vegetables are vegetables that don't have that defense mechanism. So it's very, very interesting that there were people that were root doctors, because maybe they understood that was a pure source, or...
Yes. Homeopathic reasons. They were used for their different herbs, plants, seeds, roots were used for their medicinal purposes. As you and I were saying earlier, that there is, among Gullah Geechee people, there is a belief there is energy in every living thing. And one of the characters, William Duncan, mm-hmm. known as the root doctor, and some people have feared him, but he has a son, Gregory Duncan. Gregory Duncan engages in the use of plants. And he, there's a scene where he realizes, let's see if I can find it. Gregory concluded his explanation before walking to the time clock at the far end of the kitchen. God is divine energy, he said, and light is energy. If you use a positive energy to circle around and around any negative energy, the negative energy won't thrive. Florence, we are each the wheel in the middle of the wheel, like the song you were singing. That's the truth I want people to know. And people need to realize that casting negative energy on others will pull negative energy right back onto them.
And the third part of that other thing, you're talking about the Christians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I've always said, that, you know, people weren't anything until they created the word. Because I see all this stuff in media and so forth about people having issues, anti-Semitic this, anti-Semitic this. But when you think about it, like I said, nobody was anything until they created the word. And, you know, if you think before the word was created, then what was everybody? And if there's one God, there's one quantum field, being symbiotic, God wanted creation to be symbiotic. You know, it's naive to me that some Christians might think their religion is better than other people when there's only one God. I've never understood that rationale, and using fear to sign up for their thought process.
Correct. I identify as a follower of Christ. I am sometimes apprehensive to use Christian because there are different ideas attached to that word. Mm-hmm. That some people who identify as Christian are very diametrically opposed to the belief systems of others who use that word to self-identify.
Ask yourself that question. If, you know, if there's one God, why does everybody think their religion is better than everybody else's? That's an interesting topic. So as far as the middleman here in this story, you know, he starts to realize that maybe, you know, he's turning into who's paying him. Is that what you're saying?
Florence and Chadwick Wineglass.
Yeah.
They are the main characters. They are the ones who had this hope of spreading economic legacy among their community members. But, you know, as I said, they begin to feel that they begin to realize that they are raptor-like in their intentions, and they change. Just the thought of, in dealing with Gullah Geechee culture, I wanted to share that my daughter, Sarah McKeever Days, she did research and coined the term the South is a portal. It's a timeless place. I shared some of that in this writing. I said, daily, the moon waxed and waned, rose and fell, and the salt infused low country air for generations. One day has always been as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. Time is not linear. Today's happenstance occurred yesterday and will occur tomorrow. Youths, elders, and ancestors, living and deceased, are a continuum, sung with a sea island lilt and an African diasporic pulsation. Their voices resound in the immortal word of a Gullah Geechee song. We've been coming a long time, oh yes. We've been coming a long time, oh yes. We've been coming a long time, coming a long time, coming a long time, oh yes.
If you didn't know, Ron's a singer too.
And there are all types of Gullah Geechee references to the music of Gullah Geechee people, which, like the waterways, is very rhythmic, very fluid. There are old songs that I bring out. There are old cultural beliefs that I bring out in this novel.
You're going to try to turn this into a play?
That has been suggested.
It sounds like it could be.
I was influenced in the writing of this book. Well, I was inspired by This Is Us, the TV show, because I found it fascinating. They could begin, maybe have an episode with characters here, present. But then, you know, things happened the next episode from someplace in the future. Mm-hmm. And then there's an episode somewhere in between. So you have to follow along. You know these characters' lives at different points of each of their lives, and it's not linear. Uh-huh. So that's the layout of this book.
You know, it's very simple. It's very clean. It's very, you know, I could visually see it. Sometimes it's hard to see books, but I think if you can visually see it. And when you talk about the Gullah culture.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sure. And you talk about the power of the mind. I've been thinking about this thing, one of this being symbiotic, and a lot of people talk about yin and yang, but if you accept light, if you accept dark, you can accept whatever. But if you're in the moment, you're really not accepting anything. That's why I question the yin and yang thing, because if you're in the moment, you're not questioning anything. What is the thought process about the Gullah culture, you know, in the power of the mind? Did they do any type of mental practices that might have been a little spiritual that other cultures may not do?
Well, there are different, as part of our African heritage, there have been different rituals, different initiation practices that, due to the transatlantic slave trade, those things were stopped. They may have been maintained in a smaller scale by a number of people who were, you know, dealing with acts of resilience. Because if the slave owners thought that they were practicing these African practices and beliefs, they could have been severely punished, mm-hmm. Or they could have been killed. But some of that has been maintained, and it was through realizing the importance of passing on stories within families. That too is so very important, so that the younger ones can realize in what ways they are like their ancestors, maybe not like their parents, but maybe like their grandparents. Mm-hmm. In the Henry Louis Gates episodes where he traces the ancestry of people, that's why those whose family members are uncovered to them, realizing that, for instance, their acting or their performing was much like a great-grandparent who, through the times, that's what he or she had done. Mm-hmm. And that's how things can be passed on.
The other thing is, they had a little gala in the West African cultures. They kind of had a little bit of a feng shui, kind of an Asiatic vibe idea, and I'll explain why. But I think all these ideas have a very, you know, if you listen to different ideas around the world and it comes from a pure source, I think a lot of these ideas are very, very similar, but they're conveyed differently. So when you think about feng shui, and I talk about how I have this big kick now that people don't realize that science doesn't use 1/3 of law of attraction for all their calculations. So what they use is environment. They use your non-conscious. So what you're made of, take away emotions, you don't feel anything yet. What do you innately are? You have a direction. So this is where the beginning, when you're born, in the beginning and the feng shui starts. So when you're born, based on your birthday, like I've set up stuff here in this room, my feng shui is that corner right there is success. So I have a success poster right there. I have my chair sitting here because I can see the door here. That is aligned with my birthday and my direction and my non-conscious. And we don't have to get into the third part where science does include intuitiveness and philosophy, but I think you can systematically and use it in their calculations. That's where our minds have been hijacked. Because they don't use that third part of law of attraction. But when you talk about how the West Africans and Gullah people, how they buried people, I don't know if they had something when people came into the world that was directional based on their birthday. But I do know that they buried people a certain way by the water. Now, what was that? What was all that's kind of a feng shui idea type of thing?
Well, they were generally buried so that their heads would be facing east, where across the waterways were their ancestors in Africa, where their ancestors had come from. And that is because the importance of knowing your family, connecting with your family, remaining connected with your family is very important to Gullah Geechee people, or the essence of Gullah Geechee people. There are different practices, such as when there would be conch shells, or there would be a person's personal effects. If someone smoked a pipe, the pipe would be on the grave. If someone was a baker, there might be a mixing bowl or a fragment thereof on the grave. If someone fished, a fishing pole, so that the person's spirit, when freed from the grave, would feel at home among his or her belongings.
Was there any rituals or any structure about when Gullah Geechee kids were born? Was there any thought process of that at all?
Well, like
a structure, they do anything special or different than we may not know about?
They were naming practices based on the day of the week that a child was born. That's why the name Kofi or Kofi from the Ghanaian practice of a male child born on a Friday was Kofi or Kofi as it was Creolized. There were different names of different days of the week that were assigned to the birth date of the child. If there was a particular occurrence, a behavior of the child or something with the weather occurred at the time of birth, the child would be given a basket name or a nickname based on those things.
Well, the day of the week speaks to a directional thing. I wonder what that relates to. Now, you use, you know, the other two books we talked about when you, the first episode we did, you know, you reference birds a lot. And in this, you're referencing birds again. What is the connection? I mean, I've read parts of Language of the Birds, saying the language of birds is for the kings on earth. What is the relation with Gullah and the bird usage that you use?
Like when I began Turtle Dove Done Drooped His Wings, and that's available on Etsy at my shop, Geechee Literature. As I began writing that book, the bird came to me. Mm-hmm. And just as my involvement with the Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor Commission, these birds in that story are a part of the Great Council of Birds, and they have a specific plan. And for Raptors of the Ricelands, with the thought of characters or persons who sometimes assist, and you don't know, and you begin to think that their assistance is for some negative thought, it was like raptors. All I can say is that for those two books, those are the images that I was inspired.
Well, it's interesting because I've had this connection with these birds. I have a family of hawks. I got woodpeckers. I had this, the robin story I told you about. But I hear, it's weird, like wherever I'm at, I can hear the birds talking everywhere, wherever I'm at. I noticed that first, right? I'd like to learn more about that and see what that is, you know, because there's obviously some type of communication there. Maybe it's something you don't even realize, you know what I'm saying? But I think there is something to that. You know, have you ever thought about that at all? Like, obviously, you know, I'm a deep thinker, but
yes.
But it's very interesting. So the book, it's not released yet. It's coming out in April.
April 30th is the release date by Belle Isle Books.
Okay.
And Belle Isle Books is an imprint of Brandy Lane Publishers, which is located in Richmond, Virginia, as a hardback, a paperback, an ebook, as well as an audio. And I will be doing the narrating of the audiobook. Audiobooks, I understand, must be released after the release of the hardback copy. But at www.baleislebooks.com, as well as amazon.com and barnesandnoble.com, Raptors of the Ricelands is available for pre-orders.
I know this stuff comes from the heart, and what is your hope for these stories?
Well, as I said, it's my hope that people realize the significance of Gullah Geechee culture and that it is a living culture. I had several people to write blurbs, and on the front cover, there's a blurb from Eden Royce. And Eden Royce is an award-winning author of Root Magic. She says, Days has written a genre-defined narrative of good intentions gone wrong, rich with Gullah culture and language that highlights our connections through the Caribbean and African diasporas. Julie Dash, producer and writer-director, she has an amazing film that's part of the IAM, International African American Museum. And she wrote, with the skill of a West African trunkminder, Rondes floods imaginations with a story about the importance of history, Gullah Geechee heritage, and legacy. The characters reveal truths unknown or forgotten. And also on the back cover, Samuel T. Livingston, who is an associate professor of Africana Studies and History Department of Morehouse College wrote, set against the seasonal and tidal rhythms of rice growing by our enslaved African ancestors, Raptors integrates the reader into the Lowcountry in ways few texts have done so. Entering the company of works by Gloria Naylor and Tina McElroy Ansah, this is a story that will educate, incite, and force the reader to turn each page as its characters evolve and revolve in positions of protagonist, antagonist, reapers, raptors, and reavers. Please read this book.
A great, great, I guess, plug, if you will. When you talk about Gullah people today, and I've talked to a few locally, they tell me things have changed a little bit. What does Gullah look like in the next 5 to 10 years? You're keeping the memory alive. What does that look like, and how have things changed?
There is an acceptance of Gullah culture. There is an acceptance of it being rooted in West African culture. During my childhood, no one even wanted to be identified by the word. In my community, in my family, we referred to ourselves as Sea Islanders. Now, it's not that we denied our Gullah heritage. We were proud of our Sea Island heritage. But at that time, Geechee and Gullah were considered ways of speech that were not formal English. And if you did not speak as eloquently as possible, that was labeled that you were ignorant or stupid, that you were unintelligible, which were some of the, the thoughts passed on by historians and others as a way, because it said people spoke that way because of thick lips or big tongues or low intelligence as a way of throwing shade at our West African heritage. But because with the work of the Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor Commission, there is renewed pride. There are young people who are proud of our speech and proud of our beliefs and proud of our practices. And there are ways, growing into ways of sharing our heritage with the world.
I think that speaks to, you know, I think the way we solve a lot of these, if there is anything out there that could be an issue or not an issue, whatever it is, but I think there's a way to finding thyself. Mm-hmm. If people find thyself, if there's a young guy out there that maybe wasn't, or if there's a young guy out there that didn't know he was Gullah, and he's totally given himself away, he doesn't know thyself. If he taps into thyself, he may tap into something. He may tap into special abilities. He may become a great artist like Ron Days, any of those types of things. But I think that's the evolution, is finding thyself. And if, you know, if everybody could find thyself, that's how things get fixed. It's not about finding the problem. You know what I mean?
It's not. One of the issues in the book is just the introduction to the thought of one's inner ancestral child. And there's a character who's dealing with some emotional problems, but it is known that perhaps these issues are brought on because of the inner ancestral child who's been damaged. The setting of Raptors in the Ricelands is a fictional Gullah Geechee community of Georgetown County, South Carolina. It is in a setting known as Darkesha and Morrisina. Morrisina is based on the fictional first planter who moved to the area. He was named Morrisina, but throughout the years, it was called Morsna, and Gullah Geechee people, it's Mossaville is what they called it. And Mossaville, just as in the Georgetown community, there were like 24 rice plantations just in that one community of Georgetown County. And because of all of the pain that these enslaved Africans and their descendants, the Gullah Geechee people, had to endure, their children are, could be to this very day, dealing with plagues, not plagues, things that have harmed the inner ancestral child, yeah. something. And there are different reasons that are portrayed in this novel, but just to think. Sometimes when you deal with some type of horror, it takes 7 generations to remove that out of your family line.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the issues that our people should consider and try to seek assistance with.
Well, that speaks to what I mentioned before, and we won't get too deep in this meditation thing I did, and understanding low-level energy, and understanding that when you have trauma in your life, when you have trauma, that during that time of that trauma creates these cracks. And these cracks are certain dark, low-level energy that can get in those cracks and stay with you for a long period of time. And if you don't address that and get rid of that and understand how to get rid of that, that's going to carry over to the next generation and the next generation. And that's what I'm going through with my enlightenment, you know, trying to figure out how much stuff do I got to get out of here. You know, that's a big deal. I appreciate you coming back on the show in studio. It's a great book. I mean, maybe we should make a movie out of it. You know, I can see the picture now. Is there anything else we didn't go over that?
Well, I'd like people to know that the cover image is a painting by my wife, Natalie Days.
Here, let me hold it up.
Oh yeah, in the rice fields.
Say that again. You better shout out Mama, or she's gonna be in trouble.
Natalie Days is created the cover image. Her work is Oya in the Rice Fields. And the person who she used for this image is a Georgetonian who is very proud of her heritage, Zenobia Harper. I think the art draws readers in, and I think that those who open the book will be filled.
Well, Ron, like I said, great having you here. Ron's a great artist. He's a multi-talented artist. He sings, he writes, he tells stories. He was on a TV show, right?
That's right, Gullah Gullah Island.
Gullah Gullah Island. Very creative guy. Like I said, it's very interesting to have him on and talk about grassroots of the Gullah culture and what that's about. So Raptors in the Rice Lands, I think that's going to be a great book. This has been The Powerful Ron Days, and I am John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.